Welcome back inside the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast. I'm John Ledyard, one of your hosts from over at FanRagSports.com, along with Trevor Sycamore, who covers the Victory Monday Tampa Bay Buccaneers, the Ryan Fitzpatrick revenge
game.
There it is. What a beautiful thing, right? Both of our teams got wins.
You told me.
I cover the Steelers, and both of our teams got wins, and they were both in incredibly ugly fashion, right? Even for the Bucs?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I mean, I didn't get to watch the Steelers game, so it was going on at the same time. But I was monitoring the score and saw that they were shut out late in the second quarter.
Oh yeah, and 3 points in the first half against the worst defense in the NFL. It was really, really bad stuff. But hey, got that W, 7-2, baby. Bucks got that W, feeling good on a Victory Monday. That's all I can really say. We got a lot of rookie performances to talk about. Let's start with the quarterbacks. This has kind of been fun to see how these quarterbacks, you know, Kaiser getting another crack at things with Cleveland, and he's honestly played pretty decently. I just watched a good bit of the Browns game, and I thought he did some really good things. I thought that he threw the ball down the field really well. He's still not processing very quickly from the pocket, but you can definitely see that he's becoming more comfortable throwing down the field, and his touch and his accuracy are getting a little bit better. I don't think that this season anyway is going to be that quick processor from the pocket. You're probably going to have some bad sacks from him. You're probably going to have some moment, but he's calm in the pocket. That's the thing. Like, his presence is pretty good. His movement's pretty good. The problem is he just holds the ball too long. But I think that there's some things there to work with, and man, you look at quarterbacks like Jared Goff and Carson Wentz and how much they've improved in their second seasons, and I know the Browns are probably going to go quarterback almost no matter what Kaiser does, unless he stands on his head here the last several weeks of the season. But I just think they might be better off, and given the way this class looks, just waiting on it and trying to develop DeShone Kaiser, because I think that there's real ability there, but he just needs a stable environment around him, you know?
Yeah, we like to judge these guys real quick, right? And I think we're all prisoners of it. But I mean, Kaiser's big knock coming out for most of us. I mean, for me, it wasn't his ability. It was kind of like the mental processing parts with Kaiser. And when you go to a organizations like the Browns, sorry for any Browns fans listening, but like, there seems that there is all kinds of confusion and just no stability or faith between the coaches in the front office, the owners, the coaches and the players. Nobody's on the same page. It seems like everybody's almost at this point like coming for each other's necks. And how can you be a rookie starting quarterback and think that, well, my head coach is gone next year, or my GM's gone, or the owners are going to do something that the head coach is not? So who do I want to listen to more? Do I want to listen to my head coach, who I'm supposed to listen to, who's going to be gone in a year? Or do I want to listen to an owner who isn't really calling plays or on the field or anything? So, man, I just think it's unfair for Kaiser right now. And I don't even think it's fair to judge. It's hard with a guy who, especially the reason why I knocked him coming out was he needed really a consistent place, somebody that believed in him, allowed right. him to get his confidence up, and then you could see a lot of his abilities, and there's just none of that in Cleveland.
Right, I thought Cleveland would be a good landing spot in some ways for him.
Like,
I thought Hugh and him would develop a good rapport, and you know, Hugh built up Andy Dalton, who, you know, as a quarterback that I think struggles, I don't know if you call it confidence, but certainly as the game goes on, just sometimes seems to just wilt under pressure and things like that. And I thought Hugh built him up and got the best football anyone could possibly get out of him. And I thought he could do the same with Kaiser, who had a much higher ceiling than Dalton. And honestly, listen, some of this is on Hugh, no question. A lot of it's on Hugh. Like, I don't think he's done a lot of things really well. And whether it's handling Kaiser or the Browns offense in general, decision-making as a head coach more than anything, I think. He's also had almost nothing to work with, and Kaiser has made mistakes too in this process. You know, he hasn't played well. He's made some dumb decisions, and I think Hugh has felt the pressure to save his job, which has led to some quarterback decisions that I wouldn't have made, but I get why he made them, because if Hugh feels like he has the long-term security to develop Kaiser and wait for him to be ready, then I think he's fine with Kaiser's, and he doesn't bench him when he benched him. And so I think that it's easy to kind of blame Hugh for that, but I think also the front office deserves a lot of blame, because if you're going to hire Hugh, you got to ride it out with him, man. The Browns are always looking to move on from the next head coach. I know Hugh hasn't been great here. He's also had incredibly little to work with. Greg Williams has been absolutely atrocious this year as defensive coordinator. You know, there's a lot of pieces to this. The organization has not drafted well, despite tons of picks. You know, their best pick in the last couple of years right now, based on the way everybody's playing, is Emmanuel Ogba for sure, and he's got like 3 sacks on the season. And he's a good player. He's a great run defender. He's a good football player, but he's by far the best player. You know what I mean? I would love to see Corey Coleman stay out on the field, but it just hasn't happened. The Browns have had tons of draft picks, and they've had very, very little impact so far from that class. And some of it's injuries, Myles Garrett, Corey Coleman, and some of it's just straight up you're reaching and drafting bad players way, 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 way too high. And you're wasting a lot of picks on players that aren't really talented enough to be playing in the NFL. So, yeah, I think that if you don't think the problem is all over the place in Cleveland, I definitely think you're missing a big part of this. But at the same time, I think you're right. If Kizer can get in a stable environment, and I don't think that's going to be with Hugh in Cleveland. I think he's on his way out.
At least
there.
Give him a chance.
Right. Give him a chance. Like, this kid has legit talent. And even though you and I know he was our QB4 and we weren't as high on him as some other people were at him QB1 and said he should be a top 10 pick, and you know, we weren't in that range on him. But at the same time, I think we both always agreed that he was unpolished. You know, there were mechanical issues, there were mental processing issues, but if he could get right in the NFL, he had a crazy high ceiling, and you could argue it has a higher ceiling than some of the guys that went before him. I just think that's the big if right now, if he can get all that right, and that's the big question mark. And I think he's going to need a really stable environment for that to happen. One guy who hasn't a stable environment at all, Mitch Trubisky. I mean, the Bears are an offensive mess right now. And I don't even totally blame Dow Loggins, their offensive coordinator, because what do you dial up in these situations? You know, everybody's like, oh, they run too much on first down, they're too conservative. Well, he has no weapons. You know, he just got a couple guys back. Kendall Wright and Marcus Wheaton were injured. Dontrell Inman, I think, active for the first time, I want to say, Sunday, since coming over from the Chargers after he had to learn the offense. And so there was more to work with the other day against Green Bay, and I thought he did it. I mean, Mr. Trubisky was 21-35, 297 yards. He threw a touchdown. It was a great deep strike. Yeah, he did some good things for sure. He also didn't manage the pocket very well on a couple of occasions. He struggled when he had to move off his first read at times. And, you know, there was one play they did. The Bears love to run these, and teams are keying on them now. But they're running outside zone play action with a naked boot on the backside. So Trubisky's coming out of the play action fake with a naked boot. So he's got no blocking out in front of him. And edge defenders are just starting to fly up on them, you know, realizing that they're running this play on first down. I mean, the Bears must have run it on first down since Trubisky's been in the lineup. They must have run it on first down like 10 times. So there's a ton of it on tape. Teams are starting to key on it. But he comes out of that, you got to get the ball out quick. And, you know, he has Bellamy in the flat on one play. And, you know, there's nobody within 10 yards of him. And it's an easy throw, easy pitch and catch. But he pulls it down and takes a sack. Instead of making that throw and just taking the yardage that's there, because I think he's looking for something a little bit better. And I think he'll learn to just kind of get that out and take what's there. But there were some really good things with Trubisky. Again, we said this, I think, coming out. You know, he was our QB2. We had the same top four, if people haven't followed this podcast. Trev and I don't agree all the time or maybe even that often, but but we had the same top four
QBs.
Quarterbacks. Yeah, with QBs, we saw eye to eye to this year, and we had Trubisky set. But I think we both thought, you know, pre-snap, there were some issues. Like, he was going to have to be in a great situation. We said this repeatedly, and one of the reasons why I was nervous about him getting drafted to Chicago, that he had to be in a really good situation with good help around him, like in a good offensive mind. And then, you know, that was maybe the case in Chicago, but then Kevin White got hurt and Cameron Meredith got hurt, and in season they've had like 3 or 4 injuries to wide receivers, and, you know, Zach Miller got hurt. And so, I mean, it's just been a total disaster for the Bears on that front. Offensive line hasn't stayed healthy. You know, so even if he had had something to work with, we could be seeing a different, you know, product so far out on the field. But so far, you know, the Bears' offense is just limited in what they can do. So I don't even totally blame Dow Loggins because he's in a really hard spot. But I do think Trubisky still has this really high ceiling. It's just kind of inconsistent right now, which I guess isn't that surprising.
No, I agree. I mean, I haven't been able to watch a ton of the Bears games, but certainly from the reports I get and listen to people say, it's just, I mean, it's kind of a standard rookie year for what we're getting for a rookie quarterback prospect who was highly regarded, who was traded up to get four. You know, it's obviously a guy who they believe in. They have a ton of potential. And the thing with Trubisky is that I guess I'll call it charisma. Something like there was a reason why they benched Mike Glennon. It's because, like, you understand that, hey, you know what? Glennon's got a big arm. He can make some throws down the field. But the thing is that Glennon does not process the game, I guess we'll call it, outside of structure or just like quick instant reactions. He doesn't have that kind of like ice in his veins killer mentality. Mm-hmm. And you've already seen a little bit of that with Trubisky, and this is his first year in the NFL. Like, if that's the case, you're over already proving that trade is better than a five-year veteran. You know you've got somebody there. And the whole thing is that with the NFL, and especially with whether it's coaches in their first year as a contract or rookie players or guys that you bring in who might be young, you want to put them in positions to where you can believe in them. Trubisky is a guy who you believe in, even though, you know, the results are still a work in progress.
Right.
There's something that is still going to get there, but it's that believe in part that makes it worth it. And that's the thing with Hugh Jackson or say Dirk Cutter as a coach down in Tampa Bay or things like that. Like you wonder about, it's not necessarily the execution part. I know it's wins and losses business, but there are times and scenarios where you have to just look at it and think, do I still believe in this guy? Do I believe in this guy for the long term? And if the answer is yes, then you can live with a lot more. You can live when those wins and losses aren't necessarily what you would want at that time, because you know that they're going to come. You think that they're going to come. I mean, it's what the Eagles did with Carson Wentz. It's what the Rams did with Jared Goff. You know, all that kinds of, they built something around these guys because they believed that they could possibly be the guy. Now they are. So that's kind of the way that you got to look at rookie QBs. We certainly analyze them on this show because we love to talk about rookies, but
it goes to show, like, this is going to be a huge hire for the Bears, assuming John Fox doesn't come back. So this is a huge hire. This, you know, this could determine, look at what's happened. You know, you mentioned Philadelphia and LA, and I mean, even to an extent, Dallas with Dak Prescott, that fit there with Scott Linehan. So there's a lot to this. You know, Doug Marrone with Blake Bortles and what that's, you know, I mean, we've talked about it the other week on the podcast, but I just think it's essential. Like, the more good offensive minds you can get in the NFL in place around these young quarterbacks, the better it's going to be. I mean, Jay Gruden's done an unbelievable job with Kirk Cousins in Washington. Unbelievable. I don't think Kirk Cousins is that good individually, but combine his work ethic and his toughness with what Gruden's been able to do with him, you know, I just think that they've made the absolute most out of that situation. And so I think it's going to be a huge hire for the Bears. We probably won't, unless you have any insight into it, talk a lot on this show about who we think that hire should be, other than maybe from a schematic standpoint in terms of what Trubisky can do and things like that, because it is very hard for us to predict. I know we'll probably get a lot of questions about it. It's very hard for us to predict how personalities will mesh together, how a head coach will do as a leader, how much he'll win the locker room when we don't know these guys personally. We don't talk to them personally on most occasions. So, it will be a little bit hard for us to comment on it, but schematically, I'll certainly be interested to see, you know, what names kind of get floated around. I know Josh McDaniels will probably be out there again. You know, Todd Haley's name is usually out there. I could see both of those guys working really well with what Trubisky offers. So it should be fun. I think that that's going to be one of the big things to watch this offseason is who ends up in Chicago with Trubisky and can they get the most? Because I think Trubisky is an unbelievable arm, and I think Kizer is an unbelievable arm. I think both of those guys have great tool sets, but they also have some similar issues at this point that are going to need worked out, or we could see them falter and eventually bust in the NFL, which obviously isn't what we want to see. I'll tell you who isn't busting, Trevor. C.J. Beathard, 19-25, 288, two tutties, and one pick. But against that Giants secondary, what is going on? The Giants are a train wreck, man. Absolute train wreck. But we haven't given any love to C.J. Beathard, and for good reason, because he's been pretty freaking awful. But he also has no shot. The 49ers have don't have much talent, and they don't have much blocking, and they can't really run the ball. So it's kind of a mess, but it's a good game for him. Do you think the Giants really did just straight quit on McAdoo? Because there were some times it really looked like it the other day, like, there was not much fire.
I don't know. I have a hard time talking about people quitting in F just because I'm not in locker rooms, but I know it happens. It's hard for me to ever say when it does. I mean, we could take little hints, but I don't know. Effort's a weird thing for me to question, just because there are so many elements of you have to, even though you are a reporter, and we do cover the NFL, you do have to be real with yourself and the fact that you are not a player, you are not in the locker room, you don't get to have the player to player, player to coach, whatever it is, conversations. And so a lot of times when people just kind of throw around, and I'm not just like getting on you or anything, because people said this about the Bucs a couple weeks ago, they're like, oh, they quit, there's no effort, all this stuff. And I'm just like, I mean, it doesn't look great, but I'm not going to come out here and write that they're not giving any effort, because I'm not there. So
yeah, I mean,
I don't know if they quit. They're not playing good football. That I can confirm.
It's one of those, okay, no one's going to just straight stop playing, but is everything that you did last year, you know, to the maximum in terms of whether it's effort or you know, training or whatever it might be for the Giants, is that all being done, you know, during the week and practice and things like that, is all being done to the best of the ability? Because they got worked by the 49ers offense, and that's still a defense with a lot of talent. So give Beathard credit, though, he made some big time throws down the field. So he continues to work his way up there in San Francisco. And
we got to talk about the wide receivers, man. We got to hit on him a little bit. We got to give him some love.
Juju's been great. He's been awesome, and he was probably one of the biggest reasons Pittsburgh won the other day. You know, some great routes. He made an unbelievable catch.
Did Martavis play at all?
Yeah, he played. He played pretty well, actually. So he's back in there. You know, nothing. He's back to how it was before. He's still playing. Okay. He had more targets before he missed that game the other week. He had more targets than Juju still on the season, but Juju's just making more plays. Martavis was in there. Made a couple big catches. Had a big 2-point conversion that tied the game. But Juju, just the detail of his route running, but also the ability to win inside and outside, and just come down with just about everything. You know, I think that's one of the biggest things with him, is that he's not leaving any plays on the field for the most part. Like, he's been really savvy in like veteran situations where he has to run away from guys and scramble drills and stuff like that. But also like the timing and the mesh point of his routes with other receivers has just been really, really good. And his adjustments to the ball, I mean, Ben put a back shoulder throw from him away from coverage down the seam, I think it was. And for a big third down conversion on like third and 12 or something. And Juju twisted around, snagged it out of the air, came down with it. Just a big time play from a rookie. He's the youngest player in the NFL, and he plays like a savvy veteran all the time. So I can't be more impressed with what Juju's done. He's honestly a huge reason Pittsburgh's 7-2, because they've played mostly bad this season. And he's just been great in the midst of all that. So he gets a lot of credit, but you know, Corey Davis started to come along. You know, he's 4 catches for 40-some yards,
He's not hurt. Yeah,
he's not hurt, and so he's getting out there. Mike Williams made a nice catch for the Chargers. I mean, this rookie receiver class, we're definitely taking what we can get at this point, because these guys are coming in late. That's really tough to do. We just haven't – there hasn't been the opportunity for a lot of these, because so many guys have been hurt. I think John Ross may have even played the other day, yesterday. I don't know if he did anything. Maybe I'm wrong. I could be wrong about that. I saw somebody saying he might play. But it's been a very slow start for the class, but you and I predicted the other day on the show that we thought this would, you know, things would maybe pick up a little bit as it went. And so far it looks like that things are heading in that way a little bit. I think we still have a ways to go, but Juju doesn't look like he's going to be caught, I don't think, in terms of rookie receivers in production at this point.
He's solidified and healthy in a passing offense. I don't think anybody catches him.
Right. And let me check real quick, but I think at this point he's like distanced himself, because he just had 97 yards in the last game. So he's kind of pulling away. I'll tell you who's close to him, actually. Juju is 521 yards receiving, and he's over 100 yards ahead of Cooper Kupp, who had another solid game the other day. But Evan Engram, 443 yards, and he was great again for the Giants the other day. Alvin Kamara, we're talking about offensive rookie of the year, and I think with Deshaun Watson's unfortunate injury, you know, Kareem Hunt has really cooled off, like really cooled off in terms of production, which is really all these guys care about. You know, I think Kareem Hunt should still win it, but he's really cooled off in terms of production. Let's say that continues. The offensive rookie of the year could kind of be wide open a little bit again in some ways, you know. So I don't want to say Juju's in it, but, you know, 29 catches, 521 yards, and he scored 5 times. You know, he's averaging 18 yards a catch. He's doing some big time things. I do think it's really funny. He has 7 catches of 20 yards or more, and Evan Engram also has 7 catches of 20 yards or more. So it's just funny. Engram's ability to make plays down the field for a tight end is just so rare. He's just going to be such a good player in the NFL. But I don't know, your offensive rookie of the year race right now, I mean, is it Kareem Hunt and Leonard Fournette way out ahead of everybody else to you, or could you see Juju or Evan Engram as one of these guys getting in the mix just based on pure performance by an individual, let's say?
I mean, I'm looking at Kamara's numbers right now, and I like Kamara's numbers. The problem is that the one category isn't – like, he's not going to have over 1,000 rushing yards. So you're not going to be able to say, right, 1,000-yard rusher, because people love that saying. Mm-hmm. So, you know, but he's averaging 6 yards an attempt on rushing and – almost 9 yards a catch in receiving. So he's got 400 and he's almost got 400 and 400 right now. So, mm-hmm. I mean, like, if this dude ends up with over 800 rushing yards and 800 receiving yards, that's a really good rookie year.
Right. Yeah, you're right. He's been unbelievable too. And just watch him the other day. I mean, his burst and vision between the tackles, just so good. I mean, this running back class has been unbelievable. I mean, I know Dalvin Cook gets hurt and Chris Carson got hurt and he looked really good for Seattle early in the year. Aaron Jones got hurt the other day for Green Bay. He'd been playing unbelievable. He was averaging over 5 yards a carry. Joe Mixon's in a miserable situation. You know, the list kind of goes on and on, but there's just so much talent in this group. I mean, whether it's receivers, we've seen Marlon Mack and Tariq Cohen kind of play versatile roles and they're not really consistent guys, but whether it's just guys that can contribute, or guys that can do it all, it's been a great, been a great outcome so far for this class. I don't know how you can be anything other than just overwhelmed with how impressive the group has been from top to bottom. I still think it's Kareem Hunt, 800 yards rushing this season. He's been great as a receiver. You know, he scored 4 times on the ground. He's averaging over 5 yards a carry. You know, Leonard Fournette averaging about a yard less per carry. I think he's been really, really good, just kind of really solid and reliable. I am kind of with you. I think Alvin Kamara, if you were going to pick a third place guy right now,
yeah, no, it's him, Alvin
Kamara, which
it's him.
It's incredible. Because,
I mean, just think of what he's doing for that Saints offense. They plugged him in for Adrian Peterson, and all of a sudden they're rattling off wins left and right. And I think they have, what do they have? They have 7 in a row?
Yeah, 7 in a row, I believe you're right.
They started 0-2.
Yep.
And now they plug Kamara in. He's able to be a great complement. And, man, if he finishes the year with 800 and 800 with good averages, mm-hmm. and a team that's going to win their division, God, that's – I mean, that kind of speaks volumes to me. But, man, you know, just real quick, people, as the teams are kind of dropping like flies here, and we're getting a little closer to the NFL draft order, and we're seeing who's going to pick where, I hear people who talk about picking Saquon Barkley in like the top 5, top 3. And, man, I mean, does Alvin Kamara and Kareem Hunt not hurt that argument? I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to take away anything from Saquon's talent. I'm not taking anything away from that. I'm taking away from the fact of, in the game of the NFL draft, how steep is the drop between a first round and a third round running back in a really good running back class? Because it's nearly as big of a gap as, say, a first round pass rusher to a third round pass rusher, or a first round offensive tackle to a third-round offensive tackle, whatever. Like, those drops are huge.
Right.
So if you need those at all, you have to capitalize there, and you pass on a guy who you might really like, who is fun in Saquon Barkley, but you know that you can get this kind of production, almost rookie of the year production, in the later round. I mean, when did Juju get drafted? When was Juju drafted?
One of the last picks in the second round.
Yeah, I mean, come on. Like, you're looking at getting the rookie of the year from a running back standpoint – and a wide receiver standpoint in day 2 of the draft.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just, as I watch this year and I watch these guys play well, I continue to watch this draft class, it gets harder and harder for me to justify picking positions where the value gap is much shorter up in that top 5.
Well, I think it really depends on the team, and because in a vacuum, I tend to agree with you. Like, the most important positions on the field, quarterback, edge rusher, if you can get a shutdown corner, do it. You know, look at Marshawn Lattimore and the impact he's had. Look at Jalen Ramsey and the impact he's had. Marcus Peters and the impact he had. I mean, no question, no brainer to me. Do it. Left tackle, you know, or either offensive tackle, just period. You know, if you can get any of those guys with a high pick and you need them, you should take them. some teams, like look at Dallas' situation when they drafted Ezekiel Elliott. You know, yes, you could argue they could have taken Jalen Ramsey. At that point, given their offensive line, how good that offense could become. And remember, Tony Romo was there at that time. They thought he would be the guy. You know, there was no real reason other than his health to worry about Romo from that perspective. You know, that could have been an unbelievable, and it turned out to be a great offense, even with Dak Prescott and Elliott. So in that situation with the Cowboys offensive line, given the fact that they could become a dominant unit in the NFL, arguably the best single unit in the NFL that season because of what Elliott could bring to the table behind a group like that, I thought it was 100% the right call to take Elliott, because to me, it was one of those situations where it didn't matter because everything you built around him was perfect. You could have this player reach his maximum abilities there because you had built such a great system around him and you had all the other pieces. And that offense has been great, and Dallas had a great season. And I think it was a great call for them. And obviously this season's been a little up and down because of the suspension and all that. But I still think if he were out there, Dallas is, you know, one of the best teams in the NFC. They've also had other injuries. Tyron Smith, Sean Lee's been hurt a bunch. You know, those are guys you can't lose. But, you know, they had the left tackle. They had the quarterback. They thought Tony Romo would not suffer a career-ending injury, but you know, they had Tony Romo. They had, you know, so they had a lot of the pieces in place. So I got it in that situation. Jacksonville's situation with Leonard Fournette is a really interesting one because I wouldn't have taken Fournette that high. It's worked out really well for them. Is it going to be enough though? Are we going to look back and say, you know, this was where you should have taken, you know, like we did with Carolina and Christian McCaffrey? You know, we're already questioning that move. You know, look at all these other guys producing. McCaffrey ever going to be a feature guy? If not, you know, did you overshoot this? Because I don't know that it'll ever be worth where they drafted him, even though I think he's a good player you want on your team. So the conversation has a lot of layers to it. I don't think it's as cut and dry, though, as saying don't draft a running back in the top 10. I just don't think it's that easy.
Yeah.
I mean, fit means,
I can't argue with you, obviously, team and fit. And we've talked about coaching and situation, like, means something for where you take players. But I mean, when you look at Ezekiel Elliott, you think, okay, well, that was a great pick for the Cowboys. But if the Cowboys were even like a little bit not set up as they were to take him at number four,
yeah,
I think that looks a lot different. And so, like, I'm with you. There's no reason to be like, you can't preach, no, you just don't take this guy in that case because situations could arise. But I note that in most cases, I think value doesn't fit the pick for certain positions, but you're right.
Let me ask you this before we wrap up the show. The Giants, they're going to be picking really high. Let's say that there's either no quarterback there available or they're not going quarterback because they believe Eli Manning can still play at a decent level and can still get wins for this team, and they believe they can compete now. And when they're healthy, they do have a good amount of talent, even though I think they need to shore up some spots. Uh-huh. Would you take a running back if you're the Giants?
So they're picking at like 3, right?
Yeah, say they're picking somewhere, 3 to – well, they'd probably be picking 2 because they lost San Francisco now, but somewhere in that range. Say you can't trade back. Say you can't trade back, just hypothetically, if you have to pick there.
Is their own line still trash?
Ereck Flowers has actually played really well this year in pass protection. So – and let's – you know this offensive tackle class. You know kind of where we're at with it at least a little bit right now. You know, you're probably going to be reaching a little bit if you're taking a tackle here.
I'm still taking a tackle.
Yeah.
Or Quentin Nelson, one of the two.
Yeah, Quentin Nelson. It's a legit option. They need guard help. It's interesting. I think they could be an interesting situation because put Saquon Barkley on that team or, in my opinion, Darius Geis on that team, man, you solve a lot of problems because, you know, and yes, you have to get better on the offensive line though, you're right. So if you don't get better on the offensive line, you could just be compounding the issue. I think Richburg and Pugh are both free agents, so they have a lot of concerns to worry about. So I think you bring up a good point. Quentin Nelson, an offensive tackle, I think you got to get better on the offensive line. You trade down if you can. So there are other options. I do think their situation could lend itself a little more toward taking a running back than some of the other teams like that will be drafting in that range. But yeah, that's going to be an interesting discussion to be had for weeks to come because I don't think it's cut and dry, but I do think you bring up good points that it's not the most valuable position, and you can often find guys
only kind
that
I have, John. Good points. Right. Only kind quality. I have.
Just like the play of Ryan Fitzpatrick, Tampa Bay Buccaneers savior, keeping the season alive one more week. Great stuff. We'll be back tomorrow and throughout the rest of the week on the podcast tomorrow. We got an insane weekend in college football. Absolutely insane. we got to lay out our rankings. We got to lay out where we're at with this group right now, where these teams are at, and then talk about some of the best draft class performances, because I've got some takes. There were some guys that really stood out to me last week, and I thought solidified their stock as either top players or kind of moved in that range where they're starting to catch my eye. So a lot of good stuff went down this weekend. We'll wrap it all up for you. We'll talk about more about the NFL action and preview, of course, what's to come in next week's this upcoming weekend's games. I know, weaker slate in college football this weekend, but we'll get you ready for it nonetheless. Until then, you keep it locked right here on Locked On NFL Draft.